Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Welcome inside another edition of Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm your host, John Ledyard, from over at FanRag Sports, along with Trevor Sikkema from over at PewterReport.com, covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we have combined our talents, what little there is, and our efforts to bring you Locked On NFL Draft Podcast 5 days a week. This is a Thursday edition of Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at MyBookie.ag. Trevor, how are you today, my man?
I'm doing good. Hey, we're almost to the weekend, almost to football already. But, I mean, we got a game tonight, so I guess it's a little preview for it.
I know. I'm getting excited, and it's hard to find good guests in the off season because there are just not a lot of draft-focused media people right now. You and I a little bit have that. There's a couple others.
People aren't as crazy as us, is what you're saying.
Yes, or as committed, or any of those things. You could use those terms, too. But we've been blessed to have Chris Tripasso join us today, CBS's newest sports NFL draft writer. So really excited to have Chris on the show and get your insight. Chris, how are you, my man? How's it going? And congratulations on the new gig.
I'm doing pretty good, and thank you. I guess CBS wanted to have an in-house NFL draft writer to be as crazy as you guys throughout the year. So that is
Love me it now.
And I've certainly gotten a lot of comments on Twitter, why are you writing about the draft right now? But I think traffic is actually doing pretty well. So I think there really is interest in the NFL draft year round.
Absolutely.
Man, people say all the time, they're like, why are you writing about this? Why are you writing about this? You're still reading it. Don't lie to us. You're still reading it.
Absolutely.
You're still interested in it.
Yeah, that's the truth. And you guys make sure you follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Trapasso. Last name is T-R-A-P-A-S-S-O. Make sure you guys give him a follow on Twitter. Chris, we want to ask you about a lot of the recent work that you've had up on CBS. But one of the most recent things is your latest mock draft, in which Sam Darnold is going first overall to the Cleveland Browns. We obviously know it's way out for mock drafts, and anything we're doing now is more for fun than actual projections. So much will change by the time the draft rolls around. But you have the redshirt sophomore Sam Darnold going to Cleveland with the first overall pick. Is this because you think the Browns won't get what they expect to get out of DeShone Kizer in year one, or were you just not the biggest fan of Kizer, or do you just love Darnold, or some combination of those things?
Kind of a combination. I think that the Browns still realize that they're pretty much in the beginning stages of the rebuilding process. And I don't think Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta, and, their coaching staff would be against adding another talented and young quarterback and having a real quarterback competition that doesn't include, you know, a journeyman or a bridge quarterback. And really, from what I've seen from Kizer thus far, he hasn't looked like, you know, next year he's going to be a really top-level quarterback. So I think that what the Browns will see from him, they'll be happy, you know, as a second-round pick, but not enough to stop them from, you know, passing up on Sam Darnold, who will come into the NFL as a more refined passer, I think, than DeShone Kizer was last year.
Chris, I want to talk a little bit about Saquon Barkley, and we'll probably jump around this mock draft a little bit, John and I, and just pick apart the things that catch our eye. Now, Barkley, on your first mock draft you released with SI, he was getting picked in the 20s, went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, in this mock draft, obviously after the monster game that he had after this weekend, you have him all the way up to number 4 overall. Is Barkley's range just kind of all over the place because of a combination of, well, he plays the running back position and because he's so talented? Or do you think that we're kind of narrowing down Barkley's probably not going to get past this number or this number? What do you think about him right now?
Well, I'm just looking back at the last couple of years at the running back spot. It seems like a lot of draft nicks like yourselves, and I certainly agree with this, that I don't think running backs should go in the first round and certainly not in the top 10, but we had Leonard Fournette, who I was not really that high on last year, go in the top five. Zeke Elliott, who in the past 5 or 6 years that I've been scouting the draft, was the best running back prospect that I ever watched. And I've watched all of Barkley's games thus far, and he certainly has a lot longer to go this season, but he looks Zeke Elliott-esque, and I think there's just going to be so much hype around him that a team that wants to boost its running game, you know, this is not a guy that's just an air back. He's not just going to be catching the ball out of the backfield. He's a feature back. And if there is one thing that I think he may do a little better than Elliott, it is catch the football. We've seen him, you know, make a lot of plays on screen passes as a receiver thus far. So I think, you know, it was really just the simple logic that if Zeke Elliott and Leonard Fournette, you know, two really highly touted, highly hyped running backs can go in the top five, then why can't Barkley?
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and I think the NFL, Trevor and I have been talking the last couple of days about the NFL is starting to value running backs a little bit more again, and especially versatile ones, and Barkley easily fits that role. I got to backtrack, though, and ask you about the 49ers pick at number two, Chris, because you have Josh Rosen going there from UCLA, and when Trevor and I talked a couple of weeks ago, we said if there was any quarterback that would fit with Shanahan in this upcoming class, Rosen would be one of our top two or three guys that would be from this class that going into this upcoming class that could fit really well with Shanahan. What did you see in that marriage that attracted you with Rosen at going number two to San Francisco?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that when you look at Rosen, despite some of the bad decisions that he's made, you know, thrown off his back foot, that game against Memphis, there were so many just amazing throws, and then there was those four or five what is he doing type of throws. Mm-hmm. But I think Shanahan will like that he is decently mobile, not necessarily as a scrambler, but, you know, on those bootlegs that he likes to run so much. And really, out of all the quarterbacks, whether you're looking at Mason Rudolph, Lamar Jackson, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen has the best, you know, footwork, delivery. There's really no changes that you really need to make. And I think after being with Matt Ryan, who's a pretty textbook quarterback in the pocket, I think Shanahan would kind of gravitate toward what Rosen brings to the table as an experienced, really fundamentally sound quarterback.
Now I got to ask you about a duo that I'm pretty high on myself, but you even seem to be a little bit higher than I am on, and that is the Mason Rudolph, James Washington combo. On your big board, you have Mason Rudolph is your number one overall prospect right now. You have James Washington at number three. And then in your mock draft, you have both of those guys going in the top 10. Just talk to us a little bit about that duo of players, hit a little bit on both of those guys, why you like them so much, and why I guess you're a little bit higher on them than some other people around the country are.
Well, I'll start with the one weakness for Rudolph that, you know, a lot of people pointed out to me even before the season, that he doesn't have the strongest arm. I don't think he has a weak arm. But beyond that, he checks all the boxes that I kind of look at the quarterback spot, that beyond just throwing an accurate football to all levels of the field, I always look at how well a quarterback prospect handles pressure within the pocket. Can they drift away from pressure? Do they look natural doing that? Are their eyes still down the field? And I saw some of that on his 2016 tape. And so far, even in the loss against TCU, there were times where, yes, he turned the ball over. He fumbled that one play where the TCU edge rusher kind of ran around him. But for the most part, he is very comfortable drifting in the pocket. And even when he moves outside the pocket, he still keeps his eyes downfield. I've seen him, you know, what looks to be, you know, checking his first, second, and even third read sometimes on that awesome play against Pitt when he was kind of spun around, kept his eyes downfield. He actually looked at two receivers outside the structure of the play before making kind of a back shoulder throw down the field. So that's kind of why I like Rudolph, because he has that, what I would kind of call, you know, intricacies of playing the quarterback spot. And he's really experienced. I think when you look at Darnold, even Rosen to a certain degree, those guys aren't going to come in as experienced in terms of just games played, passes attempted in college as Rudolph. And James Washington, I'm a team big wide receiver guy. And I know that Washington is not your Cortland Sutton, who's 6'3", 6'4", but just when you can hit that many big plays, but then also show that you can make those catches outside your frame, and you have a big body He's not a you know, smaller, lanky speed guy. It'll be interesting to see what he measures at the combine, because he looks bigger than, you know, 6'1", 195. He just looks stronger than that. And there have been a few throws that have been a little high. He's shown his athletic ability going up to get those. Haven't seen any drop issues. And just, you know, it's going to be 3 to 4 years of elite level production that he can stretch the field. But if he needs to be that possession guy who's just kind of used on digs and on comebacks, I think he can be that guy as well. So he's just been the most consistent over the last 2 or 3 seasons, and he's been extremely explosive this year.
I got to ask you about, because I think you've divided us somewhat now on the Mason Rudolph and James Washington conversation, because Trevor and I have gone back and forth almost on a show per show basis, where he really likes Mason Rudolph and I'm lower on Mason Rudolph. And so, and I think you're probably higher than both of us on Rudolph, and but really like him and James Washington too. We've kind of gone back and forth on and liking some things that he does. Does he have, you know, superlative traits? But you're 100% with me on one guy on your board. The number 10 overall player on your board, Ogboni Okoronkwo from Oklahoma, the edge rusher. I watched this guy from last season's tape, and I was really fond of what he did on tape last year. And now watching him this season, he looks even better. What stands out to you about Okoronkwo, and why isn't he just an undersized edge that has to move off the ball like Hassan Reddick did, or do you see more intricacy to his game?
Yeah, I think that's probably like the one knock on him. And when people have seen me so high on him through the first 4 games, they've kind of wondered, hey, you know, this guy's too small. I don't know if they're thinking of, you know, Eric Stryker, who was much smaller. But you're right. His 2016 tape, he just showed, you know, a spin move, a really good bendy outside rush. And this year they are kind of moving him off the ball. He's kind of even played some like slot corner, it seems like. But when he's rushing, I think I haven't seen a edge rusher that has his blend of not only speed around the edge, but bendiness. Against Ohio State, he was just amazing. And just his athleticism to me, and I know you guys are kind of big into this too, that, you know, athleticism, especially at the edge rusher spot, is so important. And there's times when he's kind of been pushed past the quarterback that he just stops on a dime and just dives at the quarterback. He seems like he has long arms. I think with the NFL kind of turning into a quick passing league, or really it already is a quick passing league, to have a smaller edge rusher that's just a pass rushing specialist, I don't see why that guy can't be a first round pick. And that's what's the one interesting thing about tracking these players throughout the season, that maybe going into the year, people didn't have him as a, you know, first round lock, but just watching as many games as I can, as much film as I can, I haven't seen an edge rusher that has the bend that he does.
I wanted you to touch a little bit for me on the offensive line class kind of as a whole. Just at the top really, because this is a class that, you know, we know some of the names, but here we are with a mock draft and you've got 3 offensive tackles going top 10, 4 of them going top 12. So is this just a case of offensive tackles are always going to kind of go high, or are we lower on this offensive tackle class than we should be?
I think a little bit of both. I've just watched the NFL the first 3 weeks and seen how bad the offensive line play is, especially on the edges. When it comes down to it, after free agency, there'll probably be less of a need for offensive linemen, because there's got to be almost a dozen teams that are in dire need of, you know, quality offensive linemen. And it kind of seems like teams realize, hey, let's overpay on a 26 or 27-year-old veteran that we know is going to be a quality blocker, than, you know, go the quote-unquote safe route of the past and pick a guard or pick an offensive tackle in the first round. So maybe as we kind of move closer to the draft, there won't be as money. I don't think that this is a great, at least right now, offensive tackle class, but I think that there are those names, even Connor Williams with the knee injury, that I think it happened early enough that he'll be probably ready for all the draft, you know, pre-draft stuff. You know, his film in terms of pass protection was really solid. He wasn't great against USC, but beyond that, his 2016 film was awesome. I think he just, at 6'6 and like 320, he just will check a lot of boxes. And the kid from Western Michigan, and don't totally quote me on his name, but his name is Chukwuma Okorafor.
Yeah, you got it.
Is probably the most interesting guy that I've watched and kind of researched. That he was this highly touted recruit that pretty much got an offer from every big named program in the country, and he decided to stay in his home state of Michigan, play for the Broncos. I mean, when you think about it, Taylor Metoane was a second-round pick last year, and, you know, he was playing right tackle because Okorafor was just so good at left tackle. And it's kind of the same thing of, you know, Tyron Smith and Matt Khalil a while back at USC that, you know, they were kind of both edge guys, and that Khalil came out after Tyron Smith. But I just see a lot of Tyron Smith-type raw talent in this Western Michigan product. He just is big and not, you know, really heavy. Doesn't look to carry any bad weight, and his feet are amazing. Like, I'm not used to seeing, you know, 6'6", 315 or 320 move the way he does. In that first game against USC, a big reason why Western Michigan was able to stay in that game was that offensive line just dominated both in pass protection and as run blocker. So I think he's someone that might not even go into the, you know, combine as a first or a second round pick, but if he tests really well, I think they'll kind of push people to watch his tape and see just how solid of an offensive lineman he is.
Ever since we started this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. You've got Patriots or Steelers, Chicago or Detroit. Well, let me tell you this, where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on. That's why we always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payouts, seriously, just 2 business days. You know who's going to win, so lay down some cash and win big today. We would only recommend a service to our listeners that's been good to us or those that we know, and what we've heard from many of you fans out there that use this product. That's why we're urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win. They pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. The all-new mobile site, sick. Check it out. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's LOCKEDON is the promo code. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Chris, there's a guy on your top 20 that I don't think many people would have pegged as you know, I didn't hear anyone talk about him before the season. I think people knew who he was, but I don't think people expected the explosive start that Bryce Love has had. And Trevor and I just talked about him the other day, leading the nation in rushing, 73 carries, 787 yards. He's already got 4 more yards this year than he did all of last year. He's averaging almost 11 yards per carry. He has absolutely destroyed the competition so far. And Stanford hasn't played an easy schedule per se either. What have you seen from Bryce Love that has compelled you to put him this high? Because right now, he does look like a stud.
Yeah, I mean, he was ridiculous against UCLA last week. And, yeah, some of his longer runs, you know, have been very well blocked. But to me, and this is even including Barkley, including Geis, Ronald Jones, Love is the most sudden in terms of his cutting ability. That when he makes a cut, it's sudden and he gets upfield. It's almost like a one-cut running back, which usually those are the bigger DeMarco Murray types. But I think when you watch that long 69-yard touchdown run that he had against UCLA, it was 2 very sudden cuts. I think his vision, he sees almost to the second or third level a lot quicker than most running backs do. And, you know, he's the reason that's why I put 5 running backs in the first round, because I think his stats, you know, and not even just this year, but last year with Christian McCaffrey there were just so efficient that I think a team in the, you know, teens or the 20s can say, hey, this is someone that can hit us home runs, but he's run in between the tackles in that power run game at Stanford. He just came in as someone that was probably a mid-round pick, but just what he's been able to do, that when he has gotten plays that are blocked well, he's not hitting 20 and 30 yard gains. He's hitting 50, 60, 70, 80 yard gains. I think there's a little more top end speed than we kind of thought going into the season.
Chris, I wanted you to touch on the tight ends a little bit, because the first tight end that you have coming off the board, and we're definitely in an age of teams wanting to get tight ends involved. Your first tight end you have off the board is Mark Andrews, but then the second guy is actually Jalen Samuels. So I guess just give me your thoughts on the top of this tight end class, if it's one that you could see flutter into this first round like you have there, and you guys said what it can be in the middle too.
Sure, yeah. I was kind of just really piggybacking off the big game that Samuels had against Florida State last week and just kind of see him as that perfect Patriots type of tight end. I think any team that wants to kind of, you know, value his versatility and wants to really get yards after the catch, I think Samuels is someone that, as NC State continues throughout their season, has some bigger games in the ACC, will kind of see that versatility as an H-back, as a running back, as a tight end. He can make guys miss. I don't know how super athletic he is, but, I mean, he's someone else that I've kind of, you know, it's been the topic of this interview that if you have 2 and 3 and even in, you know, some cases 4 years of, you know, efficient production, I think that really, you know, makes NFL scouts, GMs take a look at you a little bit longer. And Mark Andrews is not Rob Gronkowski. There's probably not going to be another Rob Gronkowski for a while. But he just seems to be the biggest mismatch with his size and his athleticism. There have been some plays, and certainly Oklahoma's offense is wide open, but there have been some plays where he would catch the ball down the seam, and I'm expecting him to just be a big lumbering tight end, you know, catch the ball, run into the safety, fall forward for 2 yards. And he's, like, back-juking like he's Reggie Bush, and I'm just blown away by that. So I think there have been some fumbling issues. He did get hurt earlier in the season, but – in terms of a 6'4", 6'5", tight end that's a little bit bigger, he just seems to me like the guy that can make defenders miss once you hit him, even if it's not on the seam throw, even if it's just on a kind of a angle route or just a sit in zone. I think that is kind of where teams will really value him, and he's certainly going to put up a lot of stats in that Sooners offense.
Chris, really good stuff so far. Two more things before we let you go. Wanted to ask you, who is it so far that is getting way too much attention, that is getting way too much coverage, and you just don't see it when you watch them? You don't see why people are talking about them as much as they are, to the extent that they are, as a first round pick, whatever it might be. Have there been, you know, maybe one or two players like that for you this draft season?
Yeah, probably Harold Landry, which this is, It kind of shows the fluidity of, you know, kind of ranking draft players or draft prospects during the season, that I had him as a top five guy going into the year just because he had that huge 2016 leading the nation in sacks. And I thought, you know, he had a huge test against Mike McGlinchey and Notre Dame, and he was blanked in that game. And it wasn't just Quentin Nelson kind of helping out with chips. It was, you know, there were some one-on-one situations that he just could not get, you know, by anyone on the Notre Dame offensive line, which is probably one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. I saw a lot more speed to power last season when I watched his 2016 film, and I don't know if there's an injury, if he's not trying to get hurt, but he's someone, I'm not really sure where everyone else that's kind of scouting draft prospects right now has him, but I just know going into the season, after, you know, leading the nation in sacks, I was high on him, and I know a lot of others were, and I just haven't seen him against the better competition that he's played, you know, do much of anything. I think when Boston College has played some lesser opponents, he's made some plays in the backfield, but I was expecting a lot more from him.
Also wanted to ask you about, because I actually agree with you with Landry. I think it's a good point, and I think there's been kind of this conception with Landry that he's like an ultra athlete because that's how he wins. And I'm a little bit torn. I don't see him as the top five lock, but I liked him. Like last year, I talked him up and I thought, you know, this guy should come out. He's going to be a top 50 pick. And I still think he's a top 50 guy. I'm just not sure he's a top 10 guy. And so just kind of depends. It's funny because last year's class, everyone would have said, you know, based on his 2016 tape, it seemed like most people were saying, oh, he's, you know, 25 to 40 range. And then he goes back to school and everybody's like, he's a top 10 pick next year. I'm like, well, what? He didn't even play a game since you guys had him in, you know, as a fringe first rounder, early second rounder. So It is funny how that changes some during the draft season or during the college football season. But how about the other side of things? Guys that haven't gotten enough attention. I think you've mentioned a couple of them, Okorafor being one of them maybe. But any of the guys that haven't gotten enough attention that you think they're going to skyrocket up boards, or they should be skyrocketing up boards, or maybe even they'd be a solid, like a great day two pick and no one's talking about them at this point?
Two guys that I can highlight here. I think Deontay Burnett, and he's kind of been near the bottom of my top 20 for
my man.
Love him.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because he's listed super small at like 5'10", 170, and I think that is just scary right away. But beyond, I mean, who knows what he actually weighs. He does look pretty small on the field. But to me, as someone that, you know, I like those bigger Brandon Marshall-type receivers just because of what I think they can do when they are covered. Burnett not only is quick and fast and good down the field like most, you know, sub-6-foot guys are, but how many awesome catches have we seen him make? That I think that with Antonio Brown, with Odell Beckham, and then, you know, kind of coming up with Stephon Diggs, that I think they're kind of the, you know, up-and-coming, smaller, fast speed receivers. But the one thing with all three of those guys, their ball skills are tremendous. That if you do throw it up to them in tight coverage with a safety over the top, they can come down with those more than 50% of the time. And I think that's kind of what separates them from the, you know, tons of smaller, fast, quick guys in the NFL, the Tavon Austin types that are really one-trick ponies. So I think with Burnett, he's going to continue to see a lot of targets and get a lot of yards in that USC offense. And just to see him dive to make catches near the goal line, balls at his feet, balls above his head. He's someone that I think will kind of pick up some steam as USC, you know, starts to play in some bigger games. And the one guy that I'm probably the most excited for at the combine, this is going to come from way out of left field, Josie Jewell from Iowa. I can't, and I'm not saying that I'm just a box score scout here, but when you have two straight seasons of 120 tackles, and he's on pace to have even more than that this season, it's certainly going to catch my eye. I don't know how athletic he is, though. And I think Luke Kuechly is kind of the guy here that was, you know, playing on bad Boston College teams, had just a ton of production, and people were kind of like, hey, you know, is this guy athletic enough? Can he cover? And then he just destroyed the combine and has been the best middle linebacker in the NFL pretty much since he came into the league in 2012. So with Jewell, it's not just tackles. You know, he has 19 passes that he's tipped or, you know, defended in his career at Iowa. He has 5 interceptions. He has, you know, tackles for loss, sack. So just ultra productive. And he's someone that has kind of been in my honorable mention the last couple of weeks because he's had a lot of, you know, double-digit tackle games. I thought he was pretty good against Penn State that, you know, was better competition. He's just someone that will really need to do well at the combine. And even if he has a second or a third-day pick, I think he can provide a lot of value just with his football IQ and just, you know, what he's shown he can do in terms of staying one step or two steps ahead of the offense to be really productive.
He is Chris Tipasso, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. Really great having you on the show, Chris. Hey, make sure you guys give him a follow on Twitter, at Chris, and the last name is Trapasso. Make sure you guys follow him, Chris Tipasso. Great stuff, man. Look forward to seeing you down in Mobile, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
There goes Chris. Great stuff from him. I always appreciate him coming on and just giving his insight. He's a great guy, too. We had the opportunity to hang out with him last year down in Mobile, and really great dude. This edition of Locked On NFL Draft was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie.ag, where they will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code Locked On. Use it. Trevor, we're talking, what, games tomorrow? We're talking about who to bet on. We're trying to give people advice, trying to make you guys some cheese. Just previewing the weekend in general, right?
We'll give people all the weekend knowledge they could possibly want within 25 minutes tomorrow. So, yes.
That's a big promise.
You can't get that anywhere else, folks.
That's true. You can't.
You just can't.
Absolutely not. If you want to be entered in a chance to win Pro Football Focus, Edge subscription, all kinds of cool stats, fantasy stuff, draft stuff, I can't recommend it enough. I absolutely love my subscription. If you want to be entered in a chance to win that, go to iTunes, leave us a review and a rating, and your Twitter handle. Include your Twitter handle in it, and you'll be entered in a chance to win that. We're picking one per show per week, $40 value. Really, really cool stuff from Pro Football Focus, so make sure you guys do that. Until next time, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.